Welcome to the 360T Podcast, a series that features top industry professionals offering unique insights regarding how the FX market is developing around us.
Hello, and welcome to the 360T Podcast with myself, Galen Stops. And I'm excited to be welcoming back to the podcast Van Lu, the Global Head of Solution Strategy for Fixed Income and FX at Russell Investments. Van, thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me, Galen. Always a pleasure to be on the 360T podcast.
So I had a specific reason why I wanted to invite you back, which was doing my light summer FX reading, as I always do, of course. I came across a recent case study that you published, which looks at how currency strategies can actually be effective as a diversifier in portfolios. Now, the study goes on to give a specific example, the Russell Investment ARC strategy, which we'll get to in a minute. And it was interesting because you show in quantifiable terms how this strategy actually helps diversifier. But I guess my opening question to you comes from, I think, the first line, or certainly the first paragraph of the report, in which you say that currency management is an often overlooked aspect of a multi-asset portfolio management. My question is, why don't investors typically think of FX when they're building the portfolio? I mean, it's a big liquid market. There's lots of trading opportunities. You know, lots of people who trade FX are not there to profit from FX. So theoretically, it would seem like a good opportunity. So I'm kind of curious why this doesn't come to mind for them.
Yeah, so investors build portfolios from long-only asset classes like stocks and bonds, sometimes private assets. So currency is embedded in those asset classes when you invest globally. But very often, foreign exchange is seen as an unwanted byproduct of the thing that you really want, which is international diversification. So it's seen as a source of volatility rather than a source of returns. So we are also often surprised. I mean, sometimes currency risk is completely ignored. Often that's the case with US investors because the US is such a large market and foreign assets are seen as a relatively small part of the investment universe. On the other hand, investors in Europe and Asia often do hedge their currency to reduce the volatility. But in terms of currency for return, so at most investors will have their global bond manager add some value using active currency positions. But very, very rarely do you see currency being elevated to being its own source of return.
Is that just because of the mentality that you talked about? Is it because it's not seen as able to deliver the kind of returns they want? Is it just because people aren't thinking about currencies as a kick, a benefit to the portfolio?
I mean, making spot forecasts is actually quite hard. So maybe that's what put people off. And because it comes with their other investments, it's not front of mind. But we found, as we'll later come on to with absolute return currency strategy, that you do observe these risk premia in the currency markets that when you hold them for a sufficiently long period of time, you can generate positive returns from them. And they are, as you mentioned in your intro, uncorrelated to these conventional asset classes.
So let's talk about the ARC strategy, which forms the basis of this case study. Can you, just to start us off, talk me through why the strategy was conceived and kind of how it works?
Sure. So the absolute return currency strategy, or in short, ARCs, is a systematic strategy that aims to make a positive return from currency factors. And the three factors that we use are carry, value, and trend. It's implemented as an overlay strategy using currency forwards. Therefore, it does not require upfront funding. And in its most basic form, we aim for 2 to 3% per year at 3 to 4% volatility. Because it's derivatives based, it's very easy to adapt this risk return profile to a higher or a lower risk preference. And the strategy was conceived to access risk premia that exist in currency markets in a transparent and low-cost way. And the three factors that I mentioned, or risk premia, have been documented quite extensively in the academic literature. So we rely on these risk premia persisting. We don't usually seek out factors or anomalies that may only be there for a short period of time. So that's more the business of high frequency on the cutting edge, maybe of quantitative investing, we make very infrequent changes to the rules that govern how we access these factors, and each factor has its own rules. And we only make changes when we feel that we found either a better mousetrap to capture the factor, or when we see a persistent change in the market.
One of the things I'm interested about with this strategy is that in the report, you talked about how it displayed a low or sometimes negative correlation to traditional assets. So I kind of have a two-part question for you. The first part is, what do investors want? Do they want low correlation or negative correlation? Because negative correlation is obviously a good hedge when traditional assets are going down, but then it can act as a drag on the portfolio the rest of the time. Whereas non-correlation doesn't have that drag, but then you're not necessarily guaranteed to actually have it be an effective hedge when other assets are going the wrong direction. So first question is, which one do they want? Second question is, in your experience, do investors sometimes confuse non-correlation and negative correlation?
Excellent question. Yeah, so there are two aspects of correlation that often get mixed up. One is the sign of the correlation on average, and the other is how consistent that correlation is over time. So if a strategy has no correlation on average with the stock market, but is positively correlated when stocks are down, so it goes down when stocks go down, that is probably not so appealing. Of course, you know, stable negative correlation with conventional assets like stocks, credit, and bonds is ideal. And you wouldn't find that high, stable, and negative correlation with FX strategy. They will not have the perfect hit rate. So FX carry, for example, has high return, but also positive correlation with stocks and credit. When you contrast that with FX value and trend, FX value and trend have low or even negative correlation more often than not. And that's why we really like combining the factors. So just to give you an example from 2020, our FX trend strategy performed very well during the bond sell-off of 2020, but not so well during the COVID sell-off when stocks went down in March 2020. Because the COVID sell-off, it was so sharp and the bounce back was so swift, it was just too quick for the FX trends to establish themselves. On the other hand, if you had bought a put option on the S&P 500, you would have a contractual protection against the equity drawdown, right?
Yeah.
But over time, that protection will cost you. So the beauty of something like ARX is that it is uncorrelated most of the time, but it also has a positive expected return.
Okay. Just kind of diving into the point there then, do you think that investors sometimes mistake the two or aren't clear about what they want in terms of correlations?
It's really important for investors that they know what they want. Do they want the perfect protection, which will probably cost you, like, you know, an insurance premium on your house burning down? Most of the time, you hopefully won't need it, but it will cost you that premium, or something else which is statistically diversifying or is very often negatively correlated, but not perfectly so, but it has a much lower cost, or in an ideal case, it will even maybe give you some positive return.
As you look at market conditions now, I mean, we've seen this year, you know, something of an uptick in equities compared to last year. Does this diminish the need for a diversifier like this ARK strategy in the portfolio?
The equity returns so far this year has been great, nearly 20% on the S&P 500. Probably exceeds what most analysts had forecast for the entire year. So yeah, it's fair to say you probably don't need any additional return when stocks are doing so well. Having said that, our ARK strategy has been up a bit more than 1% in the first half of the year. So I'll take that even in a good year for stocks.
Yeah.
But on a forward-looking basis, I mean, the stock rally may mean that the risk of a drawdown at some point is rising, and that diversification from currency could become more valuable in the second half of the year. And again, going back, 2022 was a really good demonstration of the value of currency strategies when stocks and bonds were down together. And we often see, just to mention that as well, very common use case of the ARK strategy is in combination with a hedge. So we see investors hedging all their unwanted currency risk from international bond or stock portfolios and then overlaid with ARKs. So I think that so far you probably didn't need any additional return in 2023, but that may change as time passes.
And obviously the big story in the currency market last year was sort of the return of volatility for kind of a sustained period, mm-hmm. which we hadn't really seen for a while. How important or irrelevant is market volatility in the currencies for the performance of a strategy like ARK's?
Market volatility is very relevant, I would say. If volatility is too low, it's more difficult to make good returns. So some of the QE period between 2012 and 2016 is in that category. So if you cast your mind back, all central banks were at zero interest rates and there was little differentiation in terms of macroeconomic policies. Currencies didn't move that much either. So that was difficult for any type of currency strategy to make good returns. On the other hand, too much volatility can also be harmful. I mentioned these sharp reversals that you sometimes see that are induced by sudden shocks or political events. They can be challenging sometimes, but volatility that is caused by a change in the macroeconomic regime, I strongly believe is very favorable for currency strategies. Again, last year is the best example in recent memory. You can say that last year we moved from a world where we thought we have very low inflation to one that suddenly had high inflation, and our trend strategy really rode that regime shift very well and had some excellent returns until about the start of the fourth quarter of last year.
Talking about QE, that actually brings me on to the next thing I wanted to ask you about. You talk about how these factors, carry, value, trend, have stood the test of time in the currency markets. But arguably, they've all had long periods of non-performance, right? Obviously, the carry trade with QE and interest rates kind of consistently low or close to zero across multiple central banks kind of killed the carry trade for a while. So isn't this like saying a broken clock is right twice a day, that sure, on a long enough timeline, carry will have performance again? Is that problematic, or does the other factors then balance that out in the strategy?
We don't need each of the factors to work individually all the time. So we know that value, for example, can have long stretches where it doesn't work. The currencies drift further away from what we think is fair value, but then there's very sudden reversion and very violent reversion to the mean. So value can certainly experience these somewhat stretched periods of lackluster performance. Carry is the other way around. When you look at the long stretch of history, carry performs well a lot of the time, but then has short and very painful drawdowns, 2008 being the most, I think, important example of that. But carry really has come back this year, especially when you include emerging market currencies. Yeah. I mean, a strategy that includes emerging and G10 currencies to form a carry factor strategy is probably up 16-17% this year to date. So you can see that when central banks are diverging, for instance, the Brazilian and Hungarian central banks have very aggressively raised interest rates to 13% or higher, then you get this really big bounce in carry. And so that's why I think putting them together is very important. You have these strong periods for one factor and maybe weaker periods for the other. And my ideal is that at any point in time, two out of the three that we employ will work. That's obviously not always perfectly the case. But if you think about macro scenarios, in an ideal world, you would think two out of the three should work. And it's more likely that one of them will lag behind a little bit. And that's, I think, the basic concept behind diversified currency factor strategies.
That makes sense. Okay, so we talked at the beginning about how difficult it is to make currency forecasts, right? So naturally, we'll round off by asking you for some forward-looking thoughts on this. Obviously, the market environment, volatility and FX has dimmed a bit. Equity seems to be doing better this year. But you highlight a few things in the report, that three risks, which were recession, political unrest, and interest rates, And each one of these are very viable circumstances that could change potentially quite rapidly, that could have negative or a positive impact on financial markets. So bearing these risks in mind, what is your outlook, should we say, for the rest of the year? And how does that impact how investors should be thinking about currency markets?
Yeah, always fun to be talking about the outlook for sure. So at Russell Investments, our main case is a recession. So we assign a 55% probability to that over the next 12 to 18 months. And if our call turns out to be correct, we think stocks may suffer and bonds will do well. And I mentioned again how I expect ARCs, the currency strategy, to perform in each macro scenario. So in a recession scenario, I would think that the value and trend strategies will do well, but carry could be challenged. Because carry is a strategy that's, I think, more conducive to where we are today, which central banks have diverged. Some central banks are at very high interest rates, like the Fed or the New Zealand Central Bank, and others still have not got off the ground, such as the Bank of Japan. So actually, when interest rate differentials widen out, that's a perfect scenario for the carry trade. But when they collapse, as may be the case when you get into the recession, carry might be lagging, but then I'd expect value and trend to do really well. Having said that, I think we're not alone in that recession call. And so far, the US economy has proven to be more resilient than expected. So what if we're wrong? The Fed may keep interest rates higher for longer. The economy might make the immaculate disinflation and the perfect soft landing.
The legendary, often spoke about, rarely seen soft landing.
That's right. Yeah, the Fed probably doesn't have a great track record of achieving soft landings, but for all our sake, you wish them luck.
Yeah.
So going back to maybe the currency strategies, if we were wrong, then maybe carry wouldn't be the disappointing strategy that I had outlined earlier. Mm-hmm. It might actually keep up its run. And so that's the beauty of combining the different factors. You don't have to be correct in your macro call. You can let the diversification of the factors work in your favor. And over time, that should generate that positive return and the decorrelation that we would expect from ARCs.
No, I think that's actually a perfect example of the diversification issue that we've been talking about. Van, thank you so much for diving into that with me and lending me your expertise. I very much appreciate it. And you know, I'm sure we'll have you back on again before long.
Thanks, Galen. It's been great fun.
And for all our listeners, please do join us again next time.
Thank you for listening to the 360T podcast. Check the 360T website to catch up on past episodes and find new listings.